Oh, groovy, baby.
Come with me if you want to live.
Oh my gosh, and we are back after a long week off. We had off for Christmas, but now we're back, you know. Christmas music reigns supreme on the 25th, of course. But now it is back to it, back time for some indie circuit. Kind of a special show this week, though. I don't know if you remember, a few weeks ago, I had posted up an interview with Gary Stern. I was over at Free Play Florida, which is an incredible three-day event that has all kinds of charities, all kinds of panel discussions, and, of course, 3 days of playing pinball and video games from the 80s, 90s, and other. So I also got the opportunity to have a long interview with an artist known as Dirty Donnie. You probably have seen some of his work. I know, you know, he has a new book that he put out. He's all kinds of, he's done the last three or four pinball machine designs. He designed Metallica's pinball machine, but he also has just tons of art out there, tons of stuff. So I asked him if he would give me an interview, and he said yes, and it ended up, you know, we just sat down, had some beers, talked, and then even after I turned off the recorder, we just hung out for a little while longer. It was a really wonderful time. I have the contact information for him, but if you go to dirtydonnie.com, you're going to see his story, you're going to see his, you know, his history, all about him. What a great guy, wonderful wife, you know, it was really a fun time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop his interview in. There won't be any music this week, but there'll be, I'm going to put in some of my movie trailers and all that kind of fun stuff. You know how I got to be. I hope you enjoy listening to all the story of how Dirty Donnie just started doing work for Metallica and started doing work for, you know, posters and all kinds of great stuff. So here is, without any further ado, here is Dirty Donnie.
Doc, you don't just walk into a store and buy plutonium. Did you rip that off?
Of course, from a group of Libyan nationalists. They wanted me to build them a bomb, so I took their plutonium and in turn gave them a shiny bomb casing full of used pinball machine parts.
We've done hundreds of shows together.
Really? All right, cool. Well, this is Mao with the Indie Circuit on Radio St. Pete. And, you know, I have the honor, the privilege, to sit down with one of the nation's greatest artists, cutting edge, incredible, Dirty Donnie.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Really blown away. I was going to say your last name, but I butcher your last name. So what is your Dirty Donnie?
Oh, it's Gillies. Yeah.
Gillies.
Yeah.
I was going to say it's probably Gillies or Gillius or I'm bad with names.
It's a tricky last name. It's another reason that's kind of where the nickname came from, Dirty Donnie. I felt that people would, it'd be a lot easier for them to remember and pronounce too, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, having
Dirty,
a nickname.
Easier. Yeah.
It's good to have a nickname. I don't know. It was like an art thing 20 years ago. I was like, I'll do a nickname, you know. And,
yeah, why not?
I kept it. So people, I don't know. Now I've got Gillies on the end of it, but yeah,
makes it official, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So you grew up in Ontario, is that correct?
Yeah, Ottawa, Canada.
Canada. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry, Ottawa. And when did you move to the States?
Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So you're correct. Still, yeah. I moved to the States about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing art full time for about 20 years, and I was living in Montreal at the time, and I things were going really good in Montreal, like art wise, and my friend actually is a roadie for Metallica, and I was visiting, and he's like, "Oh, Kirk Hammett wants to see your artwork," and so he brought me to the studio, and Kirk hired me like to do murals in their studio. This is 2002, I think, and you want to pause it?
No, we can go. Keep going.
Cool. Drinks are here.
Yeah, yes. Stella Artois, thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
So that's amazing. You know, I was. I don't know. I didn't know that, you know, you were with Metallica. How long? So you've been with them?
I've been doing art for them for, man, about 15 years, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. And I know, now Kirk, he has like an extensive B-movie horror collection, doesn't he?
That's
his influence. He loves that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We connected right away on the monster thing. But another thing we had in common back then, 2002, was pinball. I had a game at my house. It was Mars Trek, Sonic Mars Trek. And Montreal, And Kirk had like a bunch of games, you know, but yeah. We were just totally both nerding out on like, you know, pinball. He had like Twilight Zone, Dracula, and
that's so awesome.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. He had these in the studio, you know, so it was like really cool. We used to play them. So anyways, I worked for Metallica, ended up staying for 6 months doing art for the murals and doing guitars for James and bassist for Robert and painting their cars and all
Robert's
kinds of shit.
So awesome.
Yeah, Robert's amazing.
Believe
yeah,
it or not,
yeah,
I've cool. seen Suicidal Tendencies like 4 times in my life. Like, it's been with me. This is one of my first concerts, and then like periodically I just check in with them to make sure that they're okay and I'm okay. But mm-hmm. so I always thought he was like this crazy bassist, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He's so powerful and so full of energy, you know?
Yeah, I was there right before he got hired too, so I had started working the murals. So in walks Robert one day, and he's like, "Hey man, my name is Robert," and like they're like, "Hey, he's a new bass player," and so it was pretty cool, you know. And we would he was staying in the city at Mike Borden's place from Faith No More, so he would drive me home sometimes. I didn't have a rental car, so he's like, "I'll drop you off in the city," like cool, you know. And like,
so you're doing like all this work, you're doing work with them, and then you land in San Francisco. Is that where you currently live?
Yeah, I'm still in San Francisco. Yeah, so after 6 months, I was getting back to the pinball thing. I have the high score. I don't remember what the score is, but I had the high score on their Twilight Zone machine, on Kirk's Twilight Zone machine at their headquarters in San Rafael. To this date, I still have it. Nobody could beat it. It was like insane. Next time I'm there, I'll take a picture of it and I'll put it online. But yeah, I played, first time I met Pusshead, the artist, we played Twilight Zone together, and I'm like, "Hey, I got the high score, man." He's like, "Well, I'm going to unplug it." I'm like, "It's you can't, it's like batteries.
Backup, bro."
Yeah.
Nice try.
He's like, "Damn," you know, and then James came around the corner. He's like, "Hey, who's on the pinball? We're trying to have a meeting here." So yeah, me and Pusshead got in trouble by James for like, you know, cranking pinball.
Is he as
real
intense
loud.
As he seems?
He's awesome. You know, he's really cool.
Okay.
He's really cool. I joke about that, but it's just one of those funny moments where it's like, "Well, me and Pusshead are playing pinball, and we just got in trouble from James Hetfield." Like,
that's almost like you wish you could record it. I got yelled at by James and
it's
put it on
good
YouTube.
Story.
Yeah,
it's
YouTube.
Yeah, it's the perfect story for a time like right now, and we're on a podcast talking about
those
days.
Oh my god,
days,
so cool. That's really incredible. You know, Metallica is one of those bands that's timeless. You know, I've loved them since I was a kid. The first time you hear them, it kind of grabs you by your throat. Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Did you ever envision? You did. Now, you used to do a lot of posters for bands in the
I was yeah, I was already full-on art guy. I was already rock and roll. Like, this was just at that point in my career, it was like a feather in the cap. I saw it as a really good opportunity, you know. So I took it, you know, and then I didn't realize how big of an opportunity it would be, and I also didn't realize at the time that there was still this like, you know, monster of a band that like, you know, sold out concerts. You know, I just didn't. I hadn't been following them since, you know, I listened to them as a teenager, like Slayer, Metallica, Motorhead, but I'd kind of dropped off from them a bit, and I didn't really know where they were at, you know. So I just walked in more like Hetfield's into Hot Rods, Muscle Cars, and you know, they're all into pinball. They're all into, you know.
Does he still have his Beatnik, was it a 23T? He has like an old, Hetfield has like an old T with that, like the super high shifter.
Man, he has so many cars. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, they come and go, and they appears in the new one, and yeah, you know.
I wish I was like his personal like car waxer or something. I could just take him for a test drive and keep him clean.
No, you don't. No.
Cleaning vomit off him, no. So that's awesome. So now you did the first gig with them, you know, kind of like you said, the first 6 months or whatever. And now you're kind of just, you just moved there. You just moved to San Francisco.
Yeah, after 6 months, I stayed. Yeah. I stayed in the Bay Area because I was getting. It was the type of thing where I was going to visit right before that, and I was like kind of making more. I would go there. I would save up a little bit of money in Montreal. I would go there. And I would come home with more money than I left with because I was like doing poster art
win.
People were like buying my art, and so I was like, "This is the place for me to be right now." So
it's hot, and if you can, I mean, if you can live in San Francisco and actually make money.
And this was my thinking back then. It's like, this is the place for me to be right now, and that was 2002, 2003. So I stayed, you know, and then I was sort of wandering around one day, and I walked into a local store on 8th Street called Cheap Thrills, and there's this cute little girl there, and she had a burn on her leg from a motorcycle, and she's like, "Hey, man, want to go on a date with me?" She's here.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that happened.
She's here right now.
I've been Stockholm Syndrome.
That's awesome. I have a lot of admiration for you. I've always been a huge fan of you. I like Coop and Ed Roth and you know, your stuff. To me, it's like the pinnacle of what art should be, can be. You know, it's really awesome looking. You know, I have a Demonics cover that you did.
Oh, I didn't know that you knew that. Oh, yeah, so that's part of the story,
like,
actually.
I was like, yes, this is so cool because I love Tiki and surf, you know.
Well, that's the record. Yeah, that's the record cover that Chip was a roadie at the time, and he took that record from the Demonics and showed that record to Kirk. And that's the record cover that got me through Chip, through the Demonics, hired by Kirk Hammett. Yeah, because Kirk was like, I want that record cover, but like Metallica on the wall, like kind of thing.
Make it like this, but us.
Yeah. You know?
I'm like
not that record,
out.
But he wanted like a like them surfing, but he's like, I like the sky and the moon, and you know, he wanted those colors.
Well,
it's you know,
so cool.
Yeah, he didn't want me to rip the record cover off. He wanted those colors. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I used that as I was freaking out, like, oh my god, you know, he said I can interview him. That's so cool. And of course, my wife's like, who? And I said, he did this cover. And she's like, oh. And I was like, oh, and here's the 5/6/7/8. And then I have your stickers on my. I have this crazy weird truck with a Frankenstein hood.
The whole hood is
a Frankenstein vinyl wrap.
Yeah.
And then the windows has your Galaxy Girls.
Oh, that's cool.
He's around. So now you're working. Now you leave them, but you're still. Now you're just kind of almost a local artist. You know, that's. Do you have a gallery out in San Francisco, or do you just kind of do it on your own?
No, I have a home studio, so right. You know, I work from home. I have like places that I can go to rent depending on the job, you know, and a friend's shop so I can rent out to paint cars and bikes and stuff, vans and stuff. But I haven't been really doing too much of that. I've been working a lot on pinball stuff and illustrating, which all, only requires my art table and my studio room.
Nice.
So it's like,
so if you do if you now
if you're drawing, this, you know, it's cool. It's like you don't really need that much space. Like, I do a lot of different styles, a lot of different things, but you know, right now this is, you know, it's
how
perfect
do you
for me.
Keep changing, like that to me. That seems like it would be the hardest thing. If you're good at one thing, you know, Coop's Devil, it's easy just to do Coop's Devil, you know. But you kind of always evolve and push it forward and forward. How do you keep the inspiration to keep changing? How do you keep changing?
Part of it, like, thanks for recognizing that. Like, part of it is that I get bored just doing one thing. Like, after I draw, like, after I do ink on paper for, like, you know, 6 months straight, I'm just, like, super sick of it. Like, I'm bored of it. And I need to go do something else. Like, I'll bust out the airbrush and, you know, I'll go do some auto paint. You know, I'll go make something. I'll build something,
and then
I'm doing this other stuff. You know, I'll be getting excited about drawing again and going back to the.
It keeps you charged, but also keeps expanding. You know?
Yeah. I think it's really important to be like versatile too. You know, to like just do as many as much different kind of.
So, you know,
it's fun to do it that way. I don't know, like.
I went on your website. Go to dirtydonny.com. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know it, but I wanted to make sure I was saying it right for my audience. And you have a shop there, and I was like, as I was looking around, I was like, you have Vans, you have some really cool, like, 70s style, like those old funky motorcycle helmets, you know, with the super glitter, the gasser style.
Yeah.
And you painted those? Did you?
Yeah, I did a set for Bell about 6-7 years ago. Bell Helmets approached me about doing like that old school open face helmet, right before, like, I mean, it's back now and people are like, you know, like rocking them hard, but this is right before the wave hit. And so they're like, we want like your 70s, like your 60s, 70s style, like, you know, chopper tank, you know, helmet style, like your
peanut
the stuff
helmet,
you're doing.
Peanut tank, all the whole
deal.
You know?
So I did them. They're in my new book, and Pinball Wizards, Backlight Destroyers, we can talk about that later. But I tried to go for a very, like, I don't know what the word is for it, but I didn't go balls out bananas on them, but I made them kind of, like, really...
Take it a couple degrees.
They're pretty, and they're flake, and they're, you know, you know.
I keep on saying if I can save up enough and get a hot rod, I'm going to make it, like, all gasser, orange flake orange, and I'm going to tell them to, as soon as you put too much flake in, put another gallon in, then shoot it with that so it looks like a crazy orange... nightmare coming at you, you know, and that's so when you look at that old gasser stuff or that old 70s flake style, it's so pops.
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Well, I could make a cap, or a brooch, or a pterodactyl, could you...
Radio 9000, officer in trouble.
9000, the police call for trouble. And when the black ripoff of the decade has just tore up the murder capital of the world, man, you got trouble. Detroit 9000, a city in trouble. Motortown, where a hunky cop is a minority race.
He's white. In downtown Detroit, he is in a 1-9 minority.
Detroit 9000. The double cross that spelled disaster for a whole city. It's gotta get solved or the whole town's gonna explode. See Detroit 9000, rated R. It's a city all tore up. Detroit 9000.
Joe Rico's got a problem. Someone wants him dead.
Ooh, that's what I'm going to find out.
Is it a cop killer?
I've got two cops buried in the Rosedale Cemetery.
Or an ex-client?
Nobody's immune to the law, not even a cop.
There's only one way to smoke him out. You bait the hook. And this time, the bait is Mr. Rico. Dean Martin is Mr. Rico, the toughest lawyer in San Francisco, a town terrorized by a radical killer.
Samson, shooting at me.
Who strikes and disappears. His next target, Mr. Rico. Dean Martin is Mr. Rico. From MGM, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
What we're used to. We're used to such dull tones, you know. So you have that, and you have a model?
Yeah, I have a model kit, a series of models.
Is that
with
now?
AMT. Yeah.
Okay, cool, because I was like, I got to go get this, but I didn't know if it was old, so I'd have to buy it on eBay, or is that...
I'm on my second, I had a set of three come out, one a year for about 3 years, and I just signed another deal, so I should have a monster coming out next year, I think.
Sweet.
We're working on it now, and then there'll be like another car, but I'm not sure which one. And I just did a Charger, 71 Charger.
Nice.
Yeah, but it's actually their model. It's like AMT. It's generally a reissue of an old kit, and they put some goodies in it. And I redesigned the whole package and the decals. And then you know they'll put some added on, like you know different wheels and.
Yeah,
and
well, they're not going to change the tooling.
Yeah,
but
it's so expensive. Yeah. It would be so expensive to change that.
Yeah.
You know, to do it. Yeah, but the monster is like completely brand new. You know, so it's just a really cool gig.
I can't wait to see that. That's
it's a fun job.
And now they came to you, or you go to them?
Yeah, they approached me about doing something.
They approached you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the pinball, if you don't mind, I bounce around, like my brain's a little bit disjointed. You start doing the pinball stuff. How did that happen? Did Stern come to you, or did Metallica say, we want to do a pinball machine, and by the way, he's our artist?
Well, the way it started, it kind of happened that way, but the way it started was with Tanya Kleiss, who now works at Stern Pinball, and Wade Krause, who is a really good friend of mine that I've been working with on art projects. Wade and I, years back, when I don't know the exact year, it could have been 2006, 2005, maybe, I can't remember, but we did the helicopters, custom pinball machine. So we took a Kingpin game, Wedgehead, and completely stripped it and built it back up with artwork, stenciling, screen printing, hand painting, and then I showed that to James Hetfield, and he's like, "I want a Metallica one." And so we took an Earthshaker, and we did the same thing. And then we brought Tanya on board, and Tanya reprogrammed it, and we put Metallica music in it, much like you hear now in games. But back then, you didn't hear music in games, and because we were all like rock and roll, metal, the music we like, it's got to be in games, you know? Like old music, cool, but having actual band in a game is pretty. When it's just you in the game, and you can hear music, like.
That game wakes you up in there.
Yeah.
When the music's on and they turn it off, I was in earlier this morning and played. First one I went to was the Metallica one because it was open, and I love that. You know that he starts talking to you and the Metallica's ripping in and it's nice and loud. You know.
Yeah.
It wakes you up and pulls you into the game. Kinda.
Yeah, for sure.
So
after the Metallica game, we did a beatniks for custom for his car club. And then, I'd done two machines for James with my friends, and I guess I don't know who approached who, but there was talk of a Metallica game, you know, being like the next game, and so the band were like, I'd been talking to Robert a little bit, and he's like, oh yeah, we want you to do it if it ever happens, you know, and then I got a call from Stern, and they were like, hey, Metallica really wants you to do this game, and. We would love to work with you. We've seen your work. We've been looking for an excuse to work with you. Sorry, I got a frog in my throat. And I'll have some more beer. And so that's how it happened. And I got the gig. And I was like, yeah, I totally want to do this. Like, I'm already a pinball. We've had pinballs since we met. We've had them in our living room. And, you know, before we met, I had them in my old house. And, I mean, looked in. Yeah, yeah.
That's so crazy. So now, is it? I know sometimes the creative process gets a lot more difficult when you're doing it for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your vision is not going to quite look like Metallica's is, let alone Stern's.
Yeah.
So was it difficult for having three creative forces converging to squeeze one thing out? I mean,
it's part of the deal. Like, you know, like it's become part of the deal. It's like, you know, you do your own vision, you do the best you can, and then, but once things get changed, and they're going to get changed, it's also, you know, making it just as cool, making the change just as cool as the original idea,
right?
And taking
keep
someone
the
else's
flavor,
yeah,
use
yeah,
their
yeah.
ingredients,
don't,
kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
don't lose that. It's part of the you know, the deal. It's really hard to do that. It's really draining, but it's like, it's so important that when it's finished, even if it, like, you know, five different people, even if it's gone through, like, so, you know 20 market, changes or whatever, like it's still got to look like really cool, you know. Like,
yeah,
it's like the hard thing.
And
like,
I'm
really proud of the new one. Like, we'll talk about it after, but
yeah,
like,
that's so beautiful. Well, I'm a graphic artist by trade, and I always kind of say, the rule one is don't fall in love with your work, because it's going to come back totally trashed, and you're going to have to start
from scratch.
You know. So I know you deal with that all the time. I'm sure.
Yeah, I have to deal with that, sometimes, and sometimes I don't, and and it's you know, I'm prepared to deal with it, but.
So
it's really nice to like I don't know, like I get to do my own posters, like, in between these jobs. I mean, I'm at a point, it's really, really, really fortunate. It's really nice. I get to make my own schedule and stuff, and like, so I'll make time to do a poster that I can bring to these shows, and it's my own, you know, like,
well,
the ones, the Blacklight posters.
Oh,
that's like,
God,
totally
yeah.
my, you know, and I mean, I could just do those and make a living on that, but I want to work with Stern. I want to work with bands. I want to, you know.
You never know when the next call's going to
come. Yeah, I want to do art for Snap-on, you know,
Now, Snap-on, what are you doing with that? Because that's pretty cool.
Well, they approached me, like, one of my styles is, like, you know, like we talk, kind of like a weirdo. Weirdo style with you know, the big head, little body, you know, for the most part, I've become one of the go-to guys in the industry for that. So Snap-on, they basically wanted, like, you know, like monsters driving hot rods
like,
to promote their power
can
tools.
Do.
I'm like, I can do it. Yeah, I can do that. You know,
yeah, because that's so cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. I mean, you know, obviously, I don't know. I can't say he invented it, but. Obviously, Ed Roth kind of was. That's the one I always think of whenever you think of that style, just that crazy lunatic doing crazy stuff. You know?
Ed Roth was amazing, you know, and he was, you know, essentially, I mean, he was like the, you know, an art director, you know, and he hired the best in the industry to build brand new cars that didn't exist. Those all those cars he did.
Oh yeah,
and so he hired the best artists to do the T-shirts, and for that, for his time. You know, he kicked a lot of ass. He, you know, he's art director. He hired a bunch of people and made this, like, you know, vision happen. And that's what people see. You know, they see, like, mostly, like, it's like Rat Fink. You know, there's a lot of guys doing that, though. There was, like, Stanley Mouse.
Was the big one that was with him there?
There's, like, Stanley Mouse. Bill Campbell did the Weirdos. There's a guy named Monty that did the decals and Mr. Horsepower. And he did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And he was a guy that was predated all those guys. There's Ed Newton. There's Robert Williams worked for Ed Roth. You know, who's, you know, Robert Williams. He's a thing, you know.
Yeah, he almost became, Roth became, like, where people would go to apprentice and then go off and do their own thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I actually think Ed Roth was only a few years, right? I mean, his that little thing he had going on didn't last
about,
very long.
It was about a decade, and I know he got into the biker thing, and then he got out of it, the whole thing, and then he went off to Knott's Berry Farm and started sign painting, which is another cool story. But when that happened, this studio called Roach Studios, there was this void, I guess, in that scene, and they took over, but they also gave it a really cool 70s twist. Like, I don't know if you've seen the Roach Studio stuff, but it's like what Roth would have done in the 70s, but wasn't around. It's all surfing and, like, you know, girls on roller skates and, like, the 70s culture, Vans.
Oh, I know
and,
what
like,
you're talking
but it's
about,
Roach,
yeah.
and Roach hired, like, Ed Newton, who did all the drawings for Roth, all the rad cars, you know, like, you know, Ed Newton's the best guy in the world at ever drawing those cars, you know, like.
So when did you start drawing?
Google all these names, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast. Like, check out the names of these people.
Yeah, these are the most influential people that ever hit the art world, you know.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Dig them up.
Stuff,
Norman Saunders, you know, like, you know, so many people.
The list kind of the digger, the more you dig into these kind of things, the more you realize like some of the stuff that was even being made, you know, 50s, 40s, even like some of that stuff is so cool. Like mm-hmm. some of the, mm-hmm. the plain art, some of the stuff, and you realize there's been this kind of really cool art culture forever. It's just not yeah. in the history books. You have to go find it. You know?
You got to go find it. Yeah, there's a lot of these guys. There's books out on them too. So like yeah. like Norman Saunders got a really good book. He did a lot of like wacky packages. You know, the yeah, yeah, wacky yeah. packs, and you know, like Mars Attacks.
Wow.
And, yeah, there's so many cool artists out there.
So when did you start drawing? Was this, could you always draw? Like, were you, like, I know some people are very talented and just seem to be born with it, and some have to work like crazy at every turn to be good at art, you know?
I don't actually draw. My wife draws it all. It's her.
I always want to draw. My parents have a picture up in their house of, like, art that he did when he was, like, in kindergarten or, I don't know, like.
And it was probably.
No, and it's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it says, I want to fix dents in cars. I want to train killer whales, and I want to like paint it's really like yeah, you did grow up to, you know, fix dents in cars and like play with lasers and draw on things. So
yeah,
so he's living the dream.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's safe to say you're doing exactly what you were meant to.
That's
yeah.
awesome. Yeah. That's a rarity.
Be a unicorn, and that has not worked out very well.
So sad.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
So now, what? So what do you do? Like, I mean, not what do you do? How many? Do you have one book, or how many books do you have now?
I've got it's my second book.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was the first one?
First one was called Monster Revolt. It was basically the first 10 years of my career in California.
Oh, cool. Well, because then that was a lot of Metallica influence, because you were doing that kind of stuff with them. And
yeah, there's like a Metallica chapter in it, and it's the first stuff I did for Metallica. Featured my guitar picks, guitars for Metallica, and a lot of stuff for James, and had a lot of, well, just everything I did back then. Yeah. It was super fun. I learned a lot doing the book. I had Dan Stoner and Brian from Garage Magazine, Brian Bounds, do the design and help me with the writing, and we put together a really nice package, you know. I learned a lot. And I was able to, another guy that helped me out was Frank Kozik, the artist. He helped me a lot with that book, and his wife Sharon took a bunch of photos for it. And Frank was just like a really good help. And the guy's done like so much, you know. He's like the Warhol of our time, you know. Like,
you don't realize how much goes into some of that stuff. You think, oh, it's just a book. You just put your posters in there and off you go.
But, people do that. They just gonna whip it together. Here's my book. Ta-da. It's
well, never going to spend my money on this.
Yeah, 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 totally. It's just so important that you're, if you do something and it's going to be around, it's going to outlive you, and it's going to be around forever, and like people are going to get it, and you just want, I don't know, you just want to do your best, you know, like it's your, you're presenting your work, and it's got to, like, you know, so with this book, I just, you know, I designed it myself with InDesign, and I went out and I had.
There are only two things I can't stand in this world. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
Don't answer that doorbell unless you're ready for a lovely young package of trouble.
Hi, I'm Candy Wilson, the babysitter.
The babysitter. She came to sit with baby and ended up with daddy. And now together for the first time, two motion pictures that spell double trouble. The Babysitter and Weekend with the Babysitter. Two different babysitters, two different stories, right out of your own living room. Only the names have been changed to protect the guilty.
Candy, you don't think that I would. Why, I'm old enough to be.
Mr. Maxwell, you're old enough to do anything you want to do.
They're here back to back. Don't miss The Babysitter and Weekend with the Babysitter. A double-barreled film experience that hits home. Perhaps your home.
Right now, you're all that life is.
That's what I said. Right now.
A Crown International release, rated R.
Somewhere the sun shines. Somewhere the birds sing the glories of a new dawn. Somewhere sanity reigns. But here the norm is madness. Asylum of the Insane, filmed in Horoscope. See the thrilling scenes in 3D. Real three-dimensional terror that jumps off the screen and into your lap. Rated GP, you must see it from the beginning. No one will be admitted during the last 14 minutes. Asylum of the Insane. Asylum of the Insane. Asylum of the Insane. Produced in Hollywood by Maniacs.
Now I swear, the next one of you primates
even touches me. Yeah!
I hired photographers. I had everything shot professionally. I went to New York City and hooked up with Ricky Powell from the Beastie Boys, the Beastie Boys photographer, and yeah. I had Ricky shoot my photo of me, and we actually became buds, and we ended up doing some art projects together, and that's like another story. But super cool guy, like super fun dude, and he's actually coming to my book signing in San Francisco. Paps is gonna fly him out. He's gonna do his hip hop photography slideshow. And if you're listening to this, check out like Ricky Powell, the Lazy Hustler. He's got really good mixtapes. On I believe it's SoundCloud, and just you would look up The Good Life, Ricky Powell mixtapes, and it's just amazing. It's super cool,
and that's currently
he's currently doing that. He's working with a DJ in New York City, DJ Smokes, LES, and they're doing like really cool funky jazz, and then Ricky pops in and does talking, and it's really funny and cool, and he's on Instagram too. He like posts a lot of photos and stuff. Famous photographer, really funny guy.
That's one of the hardest parts for me. You know, I have a lot of dumb other things that I do, you know. The podcast are one thing. I'm doing starting up silk screening stuff. The hardest part for me is the online stuff.
Yeah.
I can build anything. I can do anything, but that stuff is like a world that doesn't make sense to me. The Instagram and the Facebook. I mean, I don't know how naturally it comes to you, but I can't ever seem to get into the habit of just, you know.
I'm pretty good at promoting myself, and I have help from like her.
Yeah, but it's not like, I mean, now that whole world is all about, like, Instagram influencers and who has the most followers and stuff, and, like, you know, it's hard to...
It's very difficult
unless you're
me.
Doing that full time, it's really hard to, like, keep up with that full time. So you do a part, you do a lot of, like, giveaways on there and stuff, but, you know, I mean, your time is better spent working, and your time is better spent working than chasing an extra million followers on Instagram.
This is a genius behind, you know. It's like what I do, you know. It's like the voice of reason, you know. If she wasn't around, man, I would have blown all, you know, like my money to make merch. It would have been all on T-shirts, which don't sell at all. Like,
exactly.
They sell, but they don't. It's just like you're always like, it's just T-shirts are like so hard. Yeah. Well, she's like, stop doing T-shirts. I'm like, but I want to do a shirt. And like,
you could play like a click farm to get you like an extra like 100,000 followers.
There you go.
But, I mean, they're not true followers. They're just like your statistics, but that's it.
Yeah. I like to keep it organic, and you know,
You have like one finger in the social media like bucket, but
devoting
too much
time to it.
So now, your posters are incredible, you know, and that's one of the things. The first time I saw some of your posters, I was just like floored with the colors and the vibrancy, you know. And how do you keep? Where do you work with the silk screeners, or do you take what you have to them and say, you know, duplicate this exactly? Because those ones that you have out at the show this week are those black light with chrome, and the colors are vibrant, and they're just the coolest things ever. So how does that come about? Did you draw those and then say, do this? Or do they help you, or, you know?
Yeah, no, it's my one thing I'm trying to do with this new poster series. I say new. I've actually been doing it for maybe about 3 years now. But so Blacklight Rebellion, trying to do blacklight posters, bring that back, in a new way, like just with my art.
We'd have to start Spencer's again.
Give it a blacklight. Yeah. Give it a blacklight twist, but make a high-end art print out of it. You know,
and that's what these are. These are beautiful high-end art prints. They're so gorgeous.
They're screen printed by Monolith Press in Oakland, and my buddy Mouse has been my printer for 8 or 9 years now. He's been doing all my posters, and he does like Kozik, he does Pusshead, he does Alan Forbes, he does all the Bay Area guys. You know. He does like Eric Roper, I think, and he does like Skinner and like. But anyways, so he's the go-to guy, and like people are trying to like, hey, where do you get your posters printed? I'm like, well, here's his number, but he's not taking anyone in, you know. Yeah. So people are like, oh, he wouldn't let me in. And,
did you ever take him something that he went, you want what now?
No. Basically, like I'll draw it, I'll color separate it, and I'll give it to him. And then he'll sometimes be like, I have this new paper, or, you know, why don't we try this? But they basically like, they just really good screen printers.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll give them the color, tell them what colors I want.
Okay, so it's coming from you, and you're
it's like, yeah.
Those are really, really funky. If you haven't seen them yet, make sure you go to DirtyDonnie.com and check out the poster series, because you'll be blown away by them. I mean, they're worth every penny. I'm like, wow, you know.
Well, they resonate. they resonate so deeply with, like, people that did shop at Spencer's or your head shop or whatever, and you're like, I want that ice castle from my wall, but, like, now I'm an adult and I can have it for real.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, just make sure you take your coupon and spend way too much on framing, and then it's art.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what I did with my 5/3/7/8 posters. Yeah. I spent $300 with a 60% off coupon. I'm like, crap.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Totally. Exactly.
Whatever. Yeah. Now I got some framed artwork, you know.
No, that's what's happening, too. It's like I'm meeting people that are like, yeah, I had one of those in the 70s, or my older cousin had one in his basement, you know, and I want that on my wall now, you know. And it's like a lot of people are doing that. They're framing them, putting them in their game rooms. And pretty cool. Yes, I would love another
set. Another UFO for you, honey?
Thank you.
So, yeah. Now, how many of these kind of things do you do a year? Not a year. How often do you do one of these, fly to somewhere?
Oh, I mean, I probably do about 12 shows a year, I think, you know. And sometimes it'll be like two or three in a month, and then I'll be off for a few months. Or sometimes it'll be like 1 month. Right now, my new book's coming out that we can talk about. But I've ramped up a kind of a mini tour, if you will. Yeah. So from... I don't know, maybe September till Christmas, it's like, you know, pretty much on the road, you know, three times a month. And
Do you ever get sick of traveling?
I love it. It's so cool. I get a little tired, you know. I get a little tired, but it's fun, you know. It's like a weekend and then you're home. And
so when you go home, do you ever think that soap is weird because it's not the little tiny soaps, it's like a big sized soap? You're like, this soap is weird. I can't hold it right. Like, you used to hotel soap, so they're always falling out. The big
body
ones
wash at home.
Body wash at home. Okay. There's woman soap in my shower. You know, it's like, I just like, oh, what's this woman product I can jam on my...
Dirty
like,
Donnie smells so...
I don't know. My business trips aren't flying around to pinball conventions and playing games for a weekend.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty cool. Business trip.
Yeah.
Write it off. There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now, what kind of different? What kind of different?
If you would have told me when I was a kid, like, hey, people are gonna pay you to, you know, they're gonna pay for you to fly around the world, and you know, I'd be like, wow, yeah.
So you said, cool, now you did say around the world. Where have you been? Where has this taken you?
Japan, Buenos Aires, Canada. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I would assume mostly...
We'll have a Europe trip coming up in the next, like, probably 16 months.
Yeah, we've been planning, but we've been talking about Europe for a little while. And then, definitely, like, Australia at some point. And,
Wherever you can get to.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, we'll see what happens the next couple of years.
And then this kind of thing, they fly you in, they set you up, everything's all squared away, and, you know, they give you a spot.
Yeah, that's generally how I work, yeah. They'll bring you out as a guest, and you know, when the pinballs come out, there's usually a flyer, and I'll sign some flyers. Or
so, you know, did you do the Pabst Blue Ribbon Can Crusher?
I did the Pabst Blue Ribbon Can Crusher. Sorry,
if you don't know what that is,
I'm a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Me too. If you don't know from at home, the Pabst Blue Ribbon has commissioned a pinball machine from Stern for their it's theirs. They sell it, not Stern. It's called the Can Crusher, you know, and I think it features your van. Is that correct?
It's my van, yeah.
That's so cool.
After the Aerosmith pinball, I did the Can Crusher artwork, and they asked me, they're like, hey, our ideas are, it's going to feature Red Fang, the band, and we'd like to have, like, a party scene with a custom van and maybe some motorcycles, and I'm like, I got this. I got it. This is what I do anyway. So
my driveway.
Yeah. And I was like, I have a van too. So yeah.
Like, let me save you a few bucks. You know.
What's up, man?
Now, as part of this deal, you get one of these machines, right?
Yeah, I do.
I was gonna say, I write that into the contract. I'm like, there's no way I would design Metallica or Can Crusher and not have those.
No, you have to have a game that you know, like, I've been fortunate enough to, like, you know, be, you know, doing these games, and it's just really, really fun to have it, you know,
I'm trying to figure out if I'm more astonished at that or that you have a house in San Francisco that can hold a pinball machine. San Francisco's... I can't envision owning something that big in San Francisco. I thought everything was very expensive and very small.
Very expensive, yes. And you know, huge, but that's why we can only keep four in the living room at any time. So
we collect a lot of stuff, too, so it's like we have to, like, draw a limit to it, you know, the different things.
We don't really need a dining room, so we turn that into, like, the record room, man cave, lounge, you know, and...
The whole house is like a collector, cave, you know. Yeah, we don't have
just
kids.
Very cool. Lots of room when you have.
All right. Yeah, well, we have a wall of records. Our living room has, you know, I think 3,000 records, and you just
there you go.
All
yeah,
you cool stuff, it. All punk and crazy stuff. You
know? Yeah,
and some classics.
and one pinball machine.
I only have one pinball machine, but then I fix them and sell them, so that keeps them.
Yeah, yeah, we cycle. We cycle through. Yeah, we cycle through too. Yeah. I just sold Twilight Zone and Elvira. We just sold Elvira.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
But you know, you mentioned like getting a game with every gig, and like that's part of the contract usually. And so now we're kind of
we have three. Yeah.
That are
soon,
just yours. That are just so it's like we can't really collect.
You can't sell those.
Else.
Yeah.
Besides,
we're
shipping them to our parents' houses.
That's awesome. Now, where did you grow up, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I grew up in upstate New York, but we moved to San Francisco about 15 years ago when we met. So
that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So my parents always wanted to live where the Federation was founded, so we came to San Francisco.
Very cool.
Trekkie nerds will get what I'm saying.
Yeah. that kind of. Then I was like, oh, I bet you. I think I know. It took me a while. My brain's not quite as crisp as it used to be.
Yeah, you know, I come from a family of Trekkies, and he's a Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars too, so you know, it keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
So do you travel to different kinds of, like, obviously I wouldn't think there'd be enough pinball places that you would go to.
Oh, there are now. It's crazy, man. There's
Okay.
I mean, there's three going on right now. There might be four in the U.S. that I know of.
Wow.
I know that there's one in there's Pacific Pinball going on right now in Bay Area, and there's I think it's the Houston Pinball Expo is going on right now too. Both I've been guests at, and both wanted me to come, but I'm like Florida got me in the spring. They're like, hey, we want you to, you know. And
yeah,
we worked this out like months ago, so
yeah,
I was like, sorry
I
guys.
Yeah, you can't.
I'm like, these guys got me. Yeah, yeah.
What other kinds do you go to? Do you go to car shows? Do you go to?
We used to do a lot of car shows. We don't anymore. Do a lot of art shows.
Yeah.
Man, pinball is the kind of the main deal.
Yes. Pretty passionate, man.
You would think it's not big enough, but it really is. I mean, the scene is so huge, and there's those diehards that have been a part of it for, you know,
it's
many
been gaining
years.
It's been gaining momentum,
I
would say.
It's growing,
I mean,
with all the barcades popping
people
up.
People bringing their kids, or just like, you know.
These are happening big time now,
yeah.
And it's a breath of fresh air. It's amazing. It's like, it's just, I'd rather actually be here with my people, like, you know, playing pinball than.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody!
You know, car shows are awesome, but, you know, they're usually, like, out in the parking lot. They're hot and sweaty, and it's like, you know, it's
crazy.
It's just like, you know, there's, like, 100 other artists,
you
and you're just like, it's, yeah, it's kind of,
yeah.
We did a lot of them, so I'm kind of like, you know, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying I'm kind of, like, I'm a little bit sick of it. And plus, also, like, it's just, I don't know, things are cool.
Well, they're
now.
Different.
Yeah.
Like, we went to one called Greaserama up in Kansas City, which is a cool event, but it was hot. I think I got sunstroked, and then it was like, it was all, you know, it was kind of.
No, yeah, we've been to many of those.
It was a tough,
like,
scene. It was 3 days, and I was like, oh, this will be punk rock and old cars, but the bands weren't really featured or anything like that. And so it was kind of,
yeah. You know what's cool about these shows is, like, there's not a level of pretentiousness that is often accompanied by, like, specialty or niche things, you know?
Right.
It's like, people are just cool, just come and hang out, come play your pinballs, come have some drinks, and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
A little bit more, more cool.
Yeah, there's
I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
That's
cool.
I'm surprised. I'm kind of like, all this stuff's going through. So we do a podcast called Slow Robot A Go Go that does all B movie review. Once a week we watch two different B movies,
cool.
And they're crazy. Like, we watch the craziest stuff from the 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm always now I'm thinking, because I know Kirk is he's huge in that stuff. You know, and just. How much art is influenced by that stuff, too, you know?
Have you guys seen FUBAR? Have you seen FUBAR, the movie?
No.
You have to watch FUBAR.
Okay.
These are friends of...
Home country.
It's from Canada.
Okay.
Friends of mine, Paul and Dave. They did a movie in 2001, I think it was, called FUBAR. And it was about two, like, metalheads. It came out around the same time as Trailer Park Boys.
Uh-huh.
And it's very, very similar, but it's not, like... Nobody ripped anyone off. They just... That came out as a show. Yeah, and theirs was a movie. And... they did a second movie a few years ago, and one of the characters, I'm not sure exactly what's happening, but it got picked up, so it's going to be like a show happening soon. And check it out. Yeah.
The documentary is really good. If you review weird stuff, that's a great one.
The sea of weirdness doesn't seem to end.
Yeah.
You know, me and the other guy I do it with are always trying to one-up each other. finding the weirder thing, you know. Yeah. So we got this stuff, and he'll dust off something from the 40s, and I'll be like, how did this get made in the 40s? We think we're all badass now, and yeah, there's some weird movie that you'll find, and I'll be like, wow.
Oh, yeah, they already did it. Yeah.
They did it 10 times worse.
Yeah. So, great-grandparents, like, totally were way gnarlier.
So, I'm trying to think of, like, I don't want to say, like, where are you going to go next? Because that's so stupid and doesn't make any sense. But, like, you know, what do you have next coming up? Like, do you have another machine, or are you going to just focus on...
Well, I mean, it's funny, because I spent the last year, I started around this time last year, even before, in the summer of 2015, I started working on my book, and that's when I'm going to get Ricky Powell to shoot my image for the book, and that's going to be just, like, the style of, like, having him be part of it, and then have different friends, you know, write for it. So I started working on the book, and then I also started working on Aerosmith, which was a total secret, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
And I worked on that, the coloring book, the book, Aerosmith Pinball, and the Can Crusher, all up until, you know, for about a year. And then I did a few posters in between. And so I spent the whole year, you know, basically up until a few months ago, just getting all this going that I couldn't show anybody or couldn't release until now.
Wow.
So here's the book. The book is has the Aerosmith art. It's the official teaser. Stern Pinball signed off on it. It's the official teaser in the book. It's all happening right now, all the work I did for a whole year. So now I'm touring, and I'm sort of like slowly...
Take a deep breath after it's
slowly
after
getting
the
released.
Tour and
maybe
a holiday season away from work? Can you even take off from work?
We do.
Well, I mean, because I know some artists say, I'm going to take off from work, and then they spend their free time drawing, trying to think, you know, their next thing, or they're already working, they can't turn the brain off. So
when Doug took time off last time, he built a life-size console frozen in carbonite so he doesn't really take time off.
But that's like a fun project. That's not like work. That's just like cool stuff.
When I take time off, I'm watching like Netflix marathons. Like, you're like, I'm just gonna build this awesome thing.
That's so cool. Well, the hobbies never end, you know.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, I guess that's going to be it for the interview. Again, make sure you go to Donnie, DirtyDonnie.com. I'll get it out eventually. My brain's already like, ugh, it's been a long weekend. DirtyDonnie.com. Yeah, bye.
Let me stop interrupting.
Don't just go. Oh, my God. This is audio format. Make sure you don't just go there, but, you know, send some love. Buy something. Money's good for people that need money, which is all of us, you know. San Francisco ain't cheap, brother. So,
hey, it's cool, man. You know, people buy stuff, but that means I can make new stuff. So it's, you know, just, you know, it's keeps it moving, keeps it going.
Anything else
you want
to tell everyone, the whole world?
Man, well, new book's out right now, Pinball Wizards, Blacklight Destroyers. It's on my site. It's all over Amazon and the web. And, you know, new pinball's coming out. And, you know, I'm going to be hopefully at a city near you. And
Make sure you see him.
Thank you for having me on your
show. And not to make you all jealous, but I got a signed copy of his book. So, on you. Thanks. That's going to be it for this week. And we'll be back next week with more indie music, and probably not Dirty Donnie, because I don't think he's going to come by to do an interview every week. But you never know. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die.
All right, well, I hope you enjoyed that, in-depth interview with Dirty Donnie. Definitely an interesting story. He was a very cool guy. You know, I can't say enough good about him. He was so accommodating, so nice. You know, and I think I think he was honest with his answers. Not honest with his answers. That sounds dumb. But I think he was genuine. He was a very cool guy, and when you talk to him, you can see he's just like the real deal. Always pushing the envelope forward, always moving his art forward. Guy's awesome, man. Make sure you go to DirtyDonnie.com and
check him out there. You know what? I didn't think I'd have time for music, but lo and behold, I do. So I'm going to play us out of here. This has been the Indie Circuit. I think it's show 148. That's a lot of shows. And we will see you next week. Probably no interview. Probably just going to be all about the music next week. So buckle up.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
I'm alone and a honey.
Ni hao, ni hao, ni hao.